Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello out there, everyone, and welcome back to None But the Brave, a presentation of Evergreen Podcasts. I am Hal Schwartz, and as always, I'm here with my great buddy, Flynn McClain. Tonight, we have the next edition of our None But the Brave archive series reviews. This one is the latest release from Cardiff, July 23rd, 2013. But before we get to that, we have a couple of housekeeping notes. As far as the show is concerned, our next full episode is going to come out at the start of next week, and we think it's going to be a really interesting one. We spoke to Cliff B. We're not using his last name for reasons that will become apparent. He is one of the first and biggest Springsteen tapers. He first saw Bruce in 1974. He attended The Bottom Line, The Roxy, Boston Music Hall in 77. We think it's going to be a really great listen for people, and check that out at the start of next week.
Oh, absolutely. He not only was there, but he remembers in pretty vivid detail a lot of the stuff that he saw and he heard and he did. So it was a great conversation, and I think you're really going to like it. And another thing we wanted to mention is that the Light of Day Winterfest is happening this weekend. The big event, of course, is Bob's birthday bash at the Basie in Red Bank, New Jersey, with Max Weinberg's Jukebox headlining. There are still tickets available. So for more information, check out lightofday.org or just go to Ticketmaster.
Now let's move on to the archive review, which again is Cardiff, July 23rd, 2013. And this is a show that you had talked about over the years as we've discussed what should be released from the various tours. And I know you were looking forward to it, and it's a very good show with a lot of interesting stuff. Still, there's something about it when I listen to it. It doesn't fully hit for me.
All right. Well, I will give you that the set list is kind of all over the place, and there's not much of what we would call a narrative or emotional arc or flow to it. I grant you that up front, 100%. But the stuff in here, to me, the highlights and the cool nuggets that we like to talk about, TV movies, Cynthia, Boom Boom, We Gotta Get Out of This Place, Tougher, I'm a Rocker. To me, they more than make up for it. And it's not like he hits a spot where it just goes dead, because there's not that in this show. But he was into it. The audience was into it, from what I can tell. And it's just fun. And it doesn't have to be an intense night every night. And this is one of the looser ones.
I agree with what you're saying. And there are some amazing highs in the show. The We Gotta Get Out of This Place. Eric Burdon sounds amazing. And that is a keeper. Obviously, you've got the one-time ever performance of TV Movie, at least during an actual show. We actually saw a TV Movie during a sound check when they allowed the audience in the year before in Philly. Cynthia, you mentioned I'm a Rocker. So all of that is really good. I think that some of the other songs, they didn't really seem to fire on all cylinders for me. And then you've got, although this is not really Bruce of the band, but The Waiting on a Sunny Day.
Oh, my God.
And of course, we're not fans of the children on stage to begin with. But, and I don't want to pick on anyone's child.
That I'm kid sorry. Was awful, Hal. Just say it.
Yeah, this was a train wreck.
Awful. But we're used to that by now. I mean, come on. No, it was just a matter of how bad he's going to be.
Yeah, I think that part of the problem is that the show sort of does veer. And we saw a show very similar to this. We're going to talk about the High Hopes tour next, and we're going to get to the final night, of course, at Mohegan, which was a very similar type of show, setlist-wise, to this, where signs were a big factor, and it veered from, like, rarities we were dying to see to some stuff that maybe we weren't as much wanting to see. And it was a vibe, certainly, that was going on in 2013 and then continuing on into 2014, that sort of anything could go. And we're not in any way, or I'm not in any way criticizing that, because it was a lot of fun. I personally would have picked a different show from 2013 to release next. Turku comes to mind, the second show in Turku, which had the only ever version of Wages of Sin, also had Ain't Good Enough for You, which still remains unreleased as part of the archive series. So, but that's a quibble, of course, and I'm having fun listening to it. It just, there, I never thought the 2013 shows in general matched up to what we had seen the year before. And the one show that really did was the arena show that they've already released. The lead show, which took place the night after this, is magnificent. Now, I personally, and I wasn't at either show, I just don't think this show, listening to it, is in the same category as Leeds.
Well, Leeds is one of the shows where he is intense and he's bringing a certain edge to it. Obviously, you have the threesome of Something in the Night, American Skin, Promised Land. And you may argue that Death to My Hometown into This Depression into Because the Night has a little bit more gravitas than
fantastic
than some of the stuff at this show. But I'm really curious as to where this show goes off the rails for you, because I wouldn't say it goes off the rails.
Don't put words into my mouth. Okay. I'm not saying it goes off the rails.
Okay. Where does it veer?
Well, the sequence, and it comes down to, and I really like Cynthia. TV Movie is just not that great of a song, let's be honest. It's one of these things, like, it's nice to see it the one time, and it's cool that he plays it one time, and we've seen a number of these songs, and again, we'll be talking about the High Hopes tour. Cynthia, it doesn't really seem to be a great version of the song. Compared to the version that we have on the archive series from the birthday show and the year before at MetLife, to me, that's a much better version. There's something missing from this version of Cynthia. And then we talked about the Waiting on a Sunny Day. There's just this to me, as a listen, and I will get to the sound, because I think also the sound is a part of what I'm experiencing here. But this, I was surprised. It did not really grab me like I expected it to, and like some of the other recent releases, especially the Philly 2009 release, which I thought was outstanding. This one just didn't do it for me in the same manner. It's a personal opinion, of course, so, and I'm sure many people will disagree, but this is not one that I find like I'm going to be listening to a lot, I don't think, in the future.
All right. Well, I really enjoy that segment from TV Movie, Cynthia Roulette, quite a bit. But I do see your point. At the Meadowlands in 2012, they soundcheck Cynthia. So, and it was on the set list, and here it was a spur of the moment sign request. And TV Movie, yeah, it's he does lose some momentum coming out of Prove It All Night, but it's a fun song, and he'll do it just one time, and I'm glad we have it in excellent quality. Another thing is that he does kind of go to the sign section kind of early here, especially with the talking, the introing, and the kind of the quick run through of the songs a little bit too early in the show. If he had done it, say, I mean, I don't know, after Wrecking Ball or after City of Ruins, maybe it would have worked a little bit better, but it's still, they're great to hear. I don't have to hear this great narrative set list every night, and this is really fun for me.
I agree, and I totally understand what you're saying. I think, as I said to you the other day when we were talking privately, sometimes when these releases come out, and I was really hoping the next one from 2013 would be Turku, I realized that when it's not Turku, now we're a year or two away at least from hearing that show.
Yeah,
I know. Which is a show that I really want to hear. So I think that also has some level of disappointment. And the other thing is, obviously, we just spent the last year talking about static set lists. Now I don't want to seem like we're veering totally.
What's this we stuff
now? Well, okay, me, that I'm criticizing the signs. I just think that as a listen, whether the choices were taken off of signs or were set listed or whatever, it's not as compelling a listen for me as some of these other shows from the Wrecking Ball tour. That's just my honest opinion of it. One other thing I did want to add in, and it actually does apply to the 2009 Philly show as well. The Prove It All Night, I love Nils, but Bruce should not have him play the Prove It All Night solo it does not work anywhere near as well as when Bruce takes it. And Nils is a great guitarist, but I just don't think what he does on that one particular song really suits the song. And it, to me, it makes the song a lesser experience than when Bruce does that final solo.
Well, I'm going to agree with you. I think he was a little bit toned down on this one than he was on the 2009 Philly release. I think this one, he sounds a bit more like Bruce. It's a bit, so it's more tolerable, or at least it's not as grating for me. But yeah, that Philly one, that, yeah, I mean, I think Eric described it as a theremin-esque solo or something along, something to that effect. And yeah, and it just really doesn't work. And I'm with you. Give me Bruce on soloing at the end of that song, and I'm there. And while we're talking about guitar solos, how about Adam Raise the Cane? I feel like the middle, the bridge, went on way much longer than usual. I was like, holy crap, this is really going on. And it works for me. I guess the horns add quite a bit in there, but Bruce is really going to town. And I think that's a fire that I know kind of some of the momentum comes to a halt here, but it really get geared up for a good night.
This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series
about how they died, why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with,
the way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app.
And subscribe now.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.
The other last thing I want to say about the set list, you had this amazing run of songs. We Got to Get Out of This Place. You mentioned how good Boom Boom was. Cadillac Ranch, Summertime Blues, You Can Look. And then it goes to Pay Me My Money Down. I'm not going to go into a rant about that. Shackled and Drawn, which by this point was dragged out longer than I think was necessary. And then The Waiting on a Sunny Day that we've talked about a little earlier in this episode. So I do think that there was a momentum lost there. The encores I thought were pretty strong. From a concert perspective, I'm not sure if I need This Little Light of Mine played twice during the same show, but it seems to work. What I will say is the version of Janie, Don't You Lose Heart is absolutely beyond gorgeous, and it slides right into Thunder Road. I really did like when he was doing these two solo songs paired together, both in 2013 and 2014 to end shows. So to me, it's a bit of a mix. And there's, as I said, there's wonderful highs. There's parts of the show that I don't think work all that well, but it makes for a good listen.
Yeah, and Shackled and Drawn and Sunny Day were in the exact same order on the lead show. And
that's true.
It's just the fact that he played Pay Me My Money Down kind of grates on you, I know.
Yeah. Now let's talk about the sound, because there's been a lot of comments, and I had listened to this one before you did. And when I first started listening, I was a little thrown, especially because the last couple of releases, especially that Philly release, I thought the sound was so spectacular that there was real life to it, and the band just sounded great. There's something here, and I saw other people mention it as well. I find this recording to be pretty lifeless, and I think that may be also part of my reaction to the overall listening experience. There's a complete lack of audience. And also the band, to me, sounds less dynamic than we've had on some of the recent releases. So I'm not sure what's going on here as far as the audience. Maybe they couldn't mic this specific venue in the way they wanted. But did you feel the same way?
No. Not in the slightest. I will grant you that it is a little bit, maybe too upfront might be the word. There is no room noise that I know you really like.
Yes.
And I did a quick comparison of Adam Raise the Cane from Bo Show just to check that the middle guitar solo on Adam. And yes, the drums have a little bit more light to them because of reverb. But otherwise, to me,
which show are you talking about?
The Philly 09.
Right. Okay.
Right. So they are way more upfront than usual with less crowd, but some people like it that way. And it doesn't bother me in the slightest. I was really, really into it. And I think all the instruments are there and at the right levels. And I don't hear that bad of a mix. And, you know, to be snarky, you know, if you want some more audience noise, I have an audience tape for you of this show that you can mix in.
All right. Well, you know, I don't like when they sound dry, and I do find that that is the way this one sounds. And we had talked about the Philly release from 2009. That one had such life in the room. Now, that's an indoor venue. I believe this is an outdoor venue. It's certainly an arena versus the stadium. There could be reasons for that. But it didn't hit in the same way as that one did, or the Meadowlands release from July of 99 did.
Okay. I definitely understand what you're saying about not a lot of room noise and a lot of audience, but I'm okay with that. I feel like we've been listening to audience recordings for 50 years, and tapers have done a great job for all those years, but and now it's time to hear the music, hear the band mixed right in your ear and right in your face, basically.
All right, fair enough. I said all I have to say about this release.
Well, I'm definitely enjoying it. And going back to the selection of the show, obviously I like this one a lot. But I also understand what you're saying about Turku. And I think I said at one point that you could almost take a dart and throw it at a list of shows from 2012, 2013. And you're going to hit a show that's going to have some cool rarities that people are really going to enjoy and other people are not. So there's a lot of good stuff on that tour. And I wish they would just maybe release five at a time. Maybe that's too greedy, but there's certainly a lot of stuff on that tour, especially in 13. I feel like Turku, and then there's the German show. And if they could redo Rome, that would be nice too. But this holds me over for now.
Yeah, and when they do release Turku, they should release both shows like they did with Paris 2012.
Absolutely.
The first night is, I don't think anyone thought was as good as the second night, but you've got some real rarities in there as well. Most importantly, Queen of the Supermarket. I know people have varying opinions on that, but it would be cool to have it as part of the archive series.
Wasn't it on Australia 2013? 14, rather?
Oh, I have to check that out. I can't remember.
I could be wrong on that. Maybe I am, but whatever. But one more comment I will say is that this may be the largest jump in sound quality for a 2012-2013 release. The audience recording is average. You know, I know what it's like to tape a show and to do a good job and not get thrown out, which I obviously haven't always done. And so hats off to them, but this was never one of the better recordings from that year. And then for Turku, you actually have two, I think both nights, an IEM quality from Crystal Cat mixed from multiple feeds. So even though you don't have a fully mixed professional version of Turku, you do have a pretty good one with Crystal Cat's release.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up again. Be on the lookout for our next full episode, which will feature an interview with Cliff B., one of the earliest Springsteen tapers. I'm not overselling this. Fascinating stories. With that, I'll just wrap it up. None But the Brave is a presentation of Evergreen Podcast, produced by Bull Market Entertainment. On Twitter, check us out at MBTB Podcast, and our Patreon page is patreon.com/mbtbpodcast.
So for Hal Schwartz, I'm Flynn McClain saying thanks for listening, and we'll see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much. We'll be seeing you.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.